Businesses need to think beyond today. That's why ADP uses data-driven insights to design HR solutions to help your business find more success tomorrow. HR, time, talent, benefits, payroll. ADP, always designing for people.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Got any rights yet? I do.
Just like that, Lady Greta told me, down by the coal creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty, beer in the tackle box, out on the flare out. Big Mac hook with only the right look, lure in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide, rubber's going.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with my guest co-host David Graham, multi-species angler and the podcast host of the Boundless Pursuit podcast. And heading into the 9 a.m. hour of Real Talk Radio, we're going to head over to line one. We're going to hear from Captain Steve Johnson because he's got the tournament and event rundown for us. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning, Debbie. Good morning, David.
Morning.
Hey there.
How's it going, Steve? What's new?
Well, I was at the Miami Boat Show yesterday and did some, lots of walking over there. So there's lots of
such a big show.
Yep. Ran into Betty Bowman, talked to her for a little bit. She was there and talked about the event that she's got coming up here in March. March 18th, she's got a Ladies Let's Go Fishing event happening at Bass Pro here locally in Fort Myers. So, ladies, if you're looking to get into the fishing a little bit, or if your husband fishes and a boyfriend, a significant other, you know, it's you want to learn a little bit. She's a great teacher, and I know you'll be there to help her out a little bit, and I'll be there helping, and I think Rob and a few other captains will be there. So, you know, join in on it. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
Locally, we've got a couple other things happening. If you're looking for something to do today or tomorrow, we've got the Everglades Seafood Festival happening down in Everglades City. Always a great event. There's also a seafood festival going on up in Punta Gorda as well. So there's kind of one for everybody, wherever you want to go. On the 19th, coming up this Sunday tomorrow, we've got a little cast net seminar happening at JC Park. So if you're looking to perfect your cast net throwing a little bit or just like to get some pointers on it, it's a free seminar happening at JC Park. I believe it starts at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Runs through 12, 1 o'clock, something like that. So that's JC's Park in Cape Coral area right there on the water off of Del Prado. Check it out if you're in the market to learn about some cast net throwing. In February here locally, we've got a couple of things happening. We've got the 5th annual Hook 'em in the Glades tournament down in Everglades City. That's a rescheduled event from the storm, and they put it together, and they've got it happening on March the 4th. Then on the 16th, we've got our 38th annual CCA Fort Myers Chapter banquet coming up. So if you're interested, if you're involved in the water, boating, fishing, anything like that, CCA is out there helping protect your rights as a fisherman. Get involved, come down, see or check out the banquet. If you're looking for tickets, give me a call. My information's all up on the website at fish-florida.com. And you can get a hold of me. We've got tickets available. It's a great event. Hope to see everybody there. So CCA does a lot of great things with the money that's raised as far as restocking, new artificial reefs, all kinds of projects, as well as, you know, protecting the fishermen's rights as far as limits and things of that nature that are out there. So up in the southwest central area, we've got coming up on the 25th, next Saturday, the Salty Gators Spring Fishing Tournament. That's happening in the Steinhatchee area. In March, we have the 5th annual Reeling Freedom Warrior Shootout Inshore Slam, and that is in St. Petersburg. On the 4th of March, we've got the Professional Redfish League Open fishing tournament. That's in Steinhatchee. And on the 11th, we've got the Power Pole Redfish Tour. It's an open event, so that's open for everybody, and that is also, excuse me, in Steinhatchee area as well. Over on the East Coast, we've got a couple of things happening. On the 25th, coming up next week, we've got the Redfish Chuck's Family Tradition Benefit Derby. That's in Merritt Island. And on the same day, on the 25th, we've got the Halifax Sport Fishing Club. It's a kids event. Kids can fish too, and that's in Port Orange area. So we've got a couple of kids events starting to happen a little bit here in the springtime. One area also in March, we've got March 11th, we've got the 13th annual Kids Fishing Clinic in St. Augustine. And on the 25th of March, we have the Florida Redfish Series. This is their stop number 3, and that's in the Jacksonville area. Down the Keys, we have a few things happening. This month on the 24th, we've got the Backcountry Fly Championship Series out of Alamorada. And then coming up in March on the 7th, we've got the Jimmy Johnson's National Championship Fishing Tournament, and that's the Quest for the Ring, and that's out of Key Largo. And on the 13th, we've got the March Merkham Permit Tournament, and that is in the Key West area. Have one event happening up in the Panhandle area the end of this month on the 25th, and that's the Redfish or Florida Redfish Series Stop number 2, and that's in Panama City. So tournaments are starting to pick up. We'll start seeing a lot of tournaments pick up in March. Hopefully we'll have a few of them starting around here a little bit. We've got April 1st, we have the Bobby Holloway tournament. That'll be one of our bigger first tournaments since the storm, so we're looking forward to that and try to get some local tournaments moving a little bit around here as well. So anybody looking to find tournaments, go to fish-florida.com. If you see a tournament, or you sure don't see a tournament up there that you'd like to get up there, give me a call. Shoot me an email, text. All my contact information's up there. It's all a free service. We'd be glad to post it up there for you and make sure everybody's aware of it.
Great, Steve. Thanks for the update. As always, we appreciate it. And we'll catch up with you next Saturday morning.
Sounds great, Debbie. See you, Dave.
Take care. Bye-bye, Steve. Bye. Have a great weekend. That is Captain Steve Johnson with fish-florida.com calling in. All right, so we've got a few minutes until we have our famous, infamous, I should say, useless information segment. But, David, I wanted to start talking a little bit about the most incredible catch of your life so far. I know I was reading through your blogs on your website, which are so well written. You guys have to head over to David's blog and check it out. It's just boundless-pursuit.com. He's got lots of great tips. A lot of the tips that we talked about today for targeting bowfin with lures and a lot of other great information. His pictures are phenomenal. But I wanted to just read this one excerpt from your post on the most incredible catch of your life. And it starts off with, I spent time drifting shiners under a float to some enormous long-nosed gar I saw rolling along the surface, while four other lines sat idly with nightcrawlers or frozen shrimp on the bottom. For about 12 hours, I sat there and caught absolutely nothing. On the occasion, I was getting small, subtle nibbles on my shrimp and nightcrawlers, and I was repeatedly being stripped of bait. I fished through a lot of the night during some insane rain showers with no real luck. Now, pick it up from there.
Sure. I don't know why I torment myself like that. You know what? I catch a lot of heat from people.
But it's
sometimes
important to get people to understand the time investment that you put in when you're targeting some of these species and some of these areas, and that it's not something that you go out and it just happens within the first hour of you being there.
No.
I mean, this is a serious investment of research time on your part and time on the water.
Sure. So I'm at a stage now, especially with like the pursuit of like something like a gar or a bowfin, where I've caught enough of them that now I only want to catch big ones. Like, you know, I like the fast action days; those are great. But I'm at a point now where it's like I've got these personal goals to catch really, really large ones. And sometimes using bait just simply affords you the best opportunity to do that. And, you know, that's like that old classic debate. It's like, oh, you know, bait versus artificials. I would challenge that, like, bait fishing in some scenarios is, you know, I wouldn't say as difficult. It's just challenging in a different way because you have to be resolute in the face of just nothingness. And sometimes that's hard to do. You think of a cruel and unusual punishment in, like, prison. It's not hard labor, you know? Hard labor, that's one thing, but that's like a general population punishment. The worst of the worst bad guys get driven and crazy by staying isolated and, you know, being lonely. What was it called?
Right.
Anyway, where you put
solitary confinement?
Solitary confinement. Yes,
yes.
That's a word.
Yes.
I lost my word. See, that's why I read my blogs. I can write better than I can talk. But sometimes sitting and staring at nothing for hours and hours and hours is extremely difficult to do, because it's very hard to do that long enough that the negativity doesn't start creeping in and those questions start to come in and you start to second guess your judgment, second guess your setup. Like, did I find the right spot? If I just go right up around that bend, maybe that spot will be better. And some of the greatest catches of my life have come at the end of that thought process, where if I had just elected to pack it up and move, I may have missed out on something incredible. So,
and this story is a prime example of that.
So we're talking about an encounter with a Gulf sturgeon, and a lot of people don't even realize Florida does have sturgeon. You think sturgeon, you think the Pacific Northwest.
Right, right.
But there are sturgeon in Florida, exceptionally, incredibly, unbelievably rare fish that only exist in a select few areas. And by all accounts, it's impossible to catch them. That when they come into the rivers, they'll come up into a select few rivers. Now, the Suwannee River up in north of here is kind of synonymous with it. In fact, you can't go to any of the boat ramps up there without seeing signs specifically warning you of the sturgeon, because they have this habit of breaching. They'll just jump out of the water like a mullet,
like
a 300-pound mullet.
And there are actually warning signs,
yes,
which I've seen.
And it's a very real hazard that if you're boating, and I recognized pretty quickly upon coming there, it's a very popular recreational boating place.
Right.
People flying down the river. Well, if you're flying down a river and it's like a, this ain't a June bug smacking against the windshield. 300-pound sturgeon to the face is a big problem. But so I will many, many times, in fact, I'm doing it today, I'll go on these treks throughout the state where I'll either sleep out of my car. I don't know why I abuse myself. So I sleep out of my car. I'll bring a tent, like a hammock tent.
Uh-huh.
And I just fish for days. And a lot of times I'll do these for bowfin, for gar. And so I'd basically set out this map from Central Florida, a little bit above Central Florida, on down into the Glades. I'm like, I'm going to spend about 3 or 4 days just traveling to different rivers and, see if I can catch anything cool and just be sitting on chunk baits. I'm just bait fishing and sitting and camping. And, it's a good time for me to just sit and reflect and reset. But I knew these sturgeon. I'm like, well, I want to go up there because I know that there's big gar in these rivers. I've done enough research to know that. But, July? I don't remember the time frame. Anyway, it's when they're thick in the river. So I'm like, well, there's a chance I might be able to see these sturgeon jumping. That's at least kind of like one of those anomalies, like the nature's events that take place that, like, I want to bear witness to. I want to see a 200-pound prehistoric fish leaving the water.
As long as it doesn't land in your boat.
In a canoe, by the way.
In your canoe, exactly.
Like, please don't land in my canoe. So I had spent a couple days out there on this river, and I'd kind of realized that these sturgeon, for whatever reason, they stack up. I don't know why they come in the rivers. I don't know anything about it. I wish I could sit here and get on this radio and pretend to be some kind of sturgeon sensei with all the answers. I don't know. I'm a big dummy. This was like the greatest catch of my life. It was also the greatest like stroke of dumb luck of my life. So it's like,
it wasn't really, because you did do a fair amount of research. You knew when those fish had the highest likelihood of being in that area, in concentrations.
Sure.
You knew, you had seen that people had caught them as bycatch.
Right.
Even though you heard many people also say it's impossible to catch them.
Yeah, so like
literally
when somebody
impossible.
Says something's impossible to catch, I become a skeptic. I'm like, what? Is there anything that just doesn't eat? Like, I mean, are they really spending an entire season and a whole summer sitting and not eating? So, then I see the photos online of people who've caught them. I'm like, well, how did you catch that? Like, what did you snag the thing? Is this an accident? So can it or can it not be done? So I was like, well, at the very least, I'm going to go up and see these things. And, the nature of bait fishing, if you throw a chunk of cut fish on the bottom, you're going to catch catfish, gar, bowfin, juvenile bull sharks that come up river. Something's going to eat that. And I'm like, who knows? Like, I don't know anything about Gulf Stream. I don't know if they eat. I knew enough that they feed mostly on, grass shrimp and things like that. So, I had some night crawlers. I had some shrimp. I had some cut bait. And I'm like, if that happens, cool. But I'm a gar and bowfin guy. before anything. So I get to this area, and I kind of realize pretty quickly they, for whatever reason, they like to sit outside. Like the Suwannee River is dotted along its margins upriver with a lot of like natural springs that just feed into the river.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I don't know if it's the sudden and abrupt change in temperature or what it is, but the sturgeon seemed very specifically to be jumping right outside of where those aquifers were. And there's a lot of aquifers you just don't see that are under, like, they're on the riverbed. I mean, this stuff's just billowing out of the bottom. And so I got to this one junction where this other smaller river feeds in, the spring-fed river, and come around this corner, and I didn't even see one at first. I just heard, it sounded like an explosion. It sounded like somebody drove their vehicle off of a bridge into the river.
And it crashed into the river.
What in the world was
that? Oh, my gosh.
And I could see, I was coming around the corner of this creek, and I could see, like, the ripples, like the residual disturbance in the water from whatever had made that splash. I'm like, oh, my gosh. This might be it.
So okay, hold that thought right there.
Yeah.
Hold that thought right there, because we have to break into our useless information segment, and then we're going to head to break, and then we're going to pick up that story.
Sure.
We got to leave people with a little bit of a cliffhanger there, David.
This is about the point of the show, David, where it just starts to get a little bit too useful, and so we have to kind of just take a step back and throw some useless information.
Right.
That's exactly it.
I've grown tired of you. What's wrong with you? You are useless.
Useless.
And now, from the totally awesome Book of Useless Information, here's your host and mine, Captain Debbie Hansen, with Useless Information.
And we're going to launch into the Tutti Frutti edition.
Tutti Frutti.
Of Useless Information.
All right.
Morning.
It's probably not about Little Richard, though.
No.
Okay, good.
No,
good. That's
no
a
Little
good thing.
Richard here.
Okay,
we're going to kick it off with the fact that grapes actually explode when you put them in the microwave.
Oh, no.
Who would have thought?
Disclaimer, don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah, right. So now
grapes actually turn into mini fireballs when microwaved. They begin sparking and as if they're electrified within a few seconds, and in some cases even produce a flash of plasma bright enough to make the microwave glow from the inside out.
Oh, my God. Thousands of people are going to be putting grapes in microwaves
today.
My mind just went there.
Yeah.
I don't believe you. I have to test it.
That's right. Wait a minute. Is this true? Bam! Whoop.
I researched it. I double-checked my sources, and there were multiple occurrences, documented occurrences of this happening. Okay, moving on to number two. Only a quarter of all pineapples actually come from Hawaii. Growing pineapples has actually become cheaper in other countries. So today, 75% of the world's pineapples come from Indonesia, Thailand, and the Philippines. I guess that could be useful if you're a pineapple connoisseur.
Yeah. I feel kind of shattered, though, because there's just something so, you know,
Hawaiian.
Yeah, this Hawaiian about a pineapple. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, if the native people aren't wearing it on top of their head,
right.
Yeah. Like the Chiquita banana lady, then I don't want it.
I feel kind of shattered.
Oh, my gosh!
I know, he said the B word.
David.
Oh, we only have 40 minutes left.
Well, and this is the last useless information tidbit of the day.
David looks a little confused. Please explain the
beer. You're allowed to say banana?
He did it again. Yeah, we've had many instances where that word has been uttered on the show, and we've had technical difficulties.
She's not lying.
Oh, no.
I'm not
because
lying.
Because it started as a conversation.
Rick is my witness.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because I'm the last person in the world to be superstitious. But when it came up about the boating superstition and it talked about, I'm not kidding. So, all right, I'm gonna
happened.
I'm gonna try to lock everything down here.
And see, this is the last useless information nugget here is that the most widely eaten fruit in America starts with a B and ends with an A. And David just mentioned it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the most widely eaten fruit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But not the most widely taken on boats.
No, definitely not.
Well, that's interesting. You picked that as a piece of useless information, but didn't say the word. So
I didn't say the word.
Kudos to you.
All right. And we're going to take a break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back.
Here am I. I come from the island. Here am I. I come from the island. What you say? say, Island boy.
You know my heart is still in the Caribbean.
Island boy.
I still hear my girlfriend say, hey,
come back home.
To the land of the palmy beaches, where your heart has always been since the very first day.
Listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host David Graham of the Boundless Pursuit podcast, multi-species angler. We're talking about bowfin, we're talking about Gulf sturgeon, and all of the lesser pursued species here this morning on Real Talk. We got quite a few text messages coming in on the text line. We got a text from Captain Josh from Ridge Manor, just north of Tampa. He says, I live on the Withlacoochee River, love topwater fishing, had a bowfin attack my zipping ziggy, saw the wake as she swam at it, came out of the water and grabbed it. Fight was equal to a small tarpon. About 5 minutes later, pulled up to the bank. It was an 8-pound fish. I let her go, but truly a memorable experience. Thank you, Josh, for your text message. We've got Art the Bills fan checking in. He's saying bowfin caviar is very popular, but don't eat garro. Garro is poisonous, can cause death.
Very true.
Good to know, Art. Thank you for the heads up on that. And then we got a text from our good friend Murray Richter out in Texas. He says, good morning, Captain Debbie and David. Years ago, I met a fellow who caught the Texas state record alligator gar, 290 pounds, I believe. What is the Florida record? I think they're only in North Florida, and I want to say it's like 130, 132.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it was somewhere above 120 pounds. That's
Yeah, that's an
interesting one, too. That's another one I'd love to go take a look at, maybe, because that's weird that they live here. It's just, I don't know. I wish they were more widespread, but at this point in time, no.
Yeah. So thanks, everyone, for your text. We're going to leave the text line open, number 239-337-ESPN. Phone lines are going to be closed for the last half hour of the show. David and I have a ton we still need to cover, so we're going to try to squeeze in as much as we can. But getting back to the story of the most incredible catch of your life. So we left off with the sound, the thundering splashes that you were hearing of these Gulf sturgeon up in the Suwannee River.
Yeah, so that was right when I was coming around the corner. I traveled down the small creek at my little launch point with the canoe. Right where it fed out into the main body of the Suwannee River is when I heard that splash. So I knew that that could probably only be one thing, but you know, you want to see it. So then I come around the corner with the canoe, and then it wasn't but a few moments later, I see the first one jump out of the water. And I mean, you want to talk about seeing something that will freeze you in your tracks.
I can only imagine.
It's one thing, you know, you can see it on YouTube or you can see photos, but like when you see it in person, like right in front of your face, a 7 to 8 foot, just gnarly looking brown prehistoric creature flying, like full breech, not half the body, like all the way out of the water. I was like, oh my gosh, they're really here. So, I had gone to the opposite bank and pulled the canoe up and grabbed all my camping gear. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just, you know, fish here for a while. And as I had, you know, I know you read that little excerpt from the blog, and there was a lot of long-nosed gar in the same spot. I don't know if they were attracted by the same features, but I sat out there and I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to put some baits out and we'll see what happens. And I've got a couple of days to work with. And then I pretty much just sat there and sat and sat and sat for a very long period of time. And all the while, I'm talking about these things were jumping every 30 seconds, one was jumping. Sometimes multiple jumps. I mean, there were so many of them.
You want to talk about the definition of driving you mad?
Yeah, they were so concentrated right in front of, like, right on top of me. I'm like, there must be, and for everyone jumping, you know, you got to assume there's probably 50 of them down below not
right.
jumping.
Right.
So I'm like, they are like
right under your
right
canoe.
Here. And, and so I sat there on a couple of different kinds of baits to see, you know, what will happen. Well, nothing happened for hours. And then it went all the way into nightfall. And then there was like these horrible storms. And then there's just no bait. I was getting stripped by what I thought. My thing was like, I thought I'd at least catch something. Like, I wasn't catching any fish. Mm-hmm. No bluegill, no, not even the gar that were everywhere. I was drifting shiners right past, and they just weren't eating. So I'm like, what? What is, you know, I'm kind of losing some patience here. And so I think I fished for, like, the first full day with nothing. Nothing. So I got up the next morning. I'm like, all right, well, I'm out of here. I ain't doing this anymore. And it was another morning shower, another rain shower in the morning. And I kind of decided, all right, well, when this rain stops, I'm out of here. I'm in a canoe. I don't want my canoe to fill with water. I'm
right.
Wait on the rain to go, and then I'll flip it back over, and I'm going to continue on to places that I know I can actually catch something. And it wasn't long after the rain subsided that I get this very awkward bite, like nothing I've ever gotten before. I looked over and I had like, it's kind of like a surf style rod set up. It was just sitting vertically in a rod holder with some baits out. And I looked over and it's just kind of like arced over at like at an angle, but it's not like moving or anything. It's just arced over. So I'm like, all right, well, you know, it's maybe some
snag,
yeah,
on something.
Like some grass or something's probably drifted down river and got a hold of the line. So I was like, I'm just going to run a quick bait check and be done with this. And I'm ready to get out of here. So I went tight on it, and then all of a sudden, it started pulling back. And I was like, oh, my God, please tell me I don't have what I think's on those lines. There's nothing else in those rivers that could possibly be, like, possess the level of power that this thing began pulling with.
Yeah.
So I knew what was happening. I'm like, well, did it swim into the line? They're so thick down there, that's a very real possibility.
Okay, so as a fellow angler, I can only imagine the rush of adrenaline that at that point kicked in.
Yeah, because I mean, I knew
like
what
butterflies
it had to be.
Mixed with just sheer adrenaline.
I was like, this is no gar, this is no catfish or bowfin. It was astonishing, like indescribable power. And I mean, I've caught like 7.5 foot long alligator gar, and this thing put them to shame. I mean, it was, you know, it's a migratory species of fish that spends a lot of its life cycle in the oceans. It's full of power,
right,
and stamina and strength. And it was just this obnoxiously powerful, blinding run. Now, the thing, I had come somewhat prepared for the possibility that this might happen. I was very much overkilling it with my gear. I had, you know, 150-pound braided line on, like 8,500-size spinning reels, the kind of gear that I've used for alligator gar. And
do you use any kind of a leader?
No,
typically.
No, even with, I have actually learned, even with fish that have teeth, like even the gar and the bowfin that I fish for, I've moved away from steel leaders. I think it's unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I'll use, you know, heavier braided leader. Like I'll use 200-pound or Dacron leader, like something. I like supple, soft to the bite touch leader for fish. Like, they're not like sharks. They're not going to really,
right,
their teeth don't cut like that. It's more like, you know, they're conical teeth that bite and hold. But anyway, so finally, what I was thinking is, like, you know, I've never caught a sturgeon. And so I'd seen videos of, like, white sturgeon. They jump. Like, you hook them, they'll come flying out. So
yeah.
And these things are jumping right in front of me. Like, I'm like, well, maybe they jump when you hook them. It was not the case, which surprised me. I was thinking, you know, they're going to – maybe they'll jump like all the other sturgeon do and jump like they've been doing. But it was just digging. It felt like a shark. And then they look like a shark. They're built like a shark. It was just a hard, unbelievably powerful run. So I finally get this thing to the bank, and when I got eyes on it, I couldn't believe it. It was fair hooked in the mouth. I'm like, there's no way. I've done it. I've, like, this is like never, this is unprecedented. This
yeah.
has never been done before. But I also know, you know, this is a species of fish that's protected. Like, you got to be smart with it. Like, I want to get great photos and things, but you got to be reasonable and intelligent and preserve the animal, because it's an unprecedented once-in-a-lifetime type of thing. So very much move quickly to keep the fish in the water, but not so much in the water that I'm putting my own safety at risk, and, you know, snap my few shots and be done with this. And then, you know, I was still ready to go even after that. I'm like, okay, well, now it's over. This has just happened, but boy, you talk about
and an how do you top that?
Yeah, well, you talk about an awe-inspiring animal. Like, to hold that thing in your arms,
I can't
was
even imagine.
It was a very bizarre look, and you can see photos of it on my website and Instagram. But like the eyes of this thing was like this dark, soulless, strange experience to look into the eyes of this thing. It was very, very unlike anything I've ever experienced. But the scutes on these things, so scutes kind of like they're like these little armor-plated things that go down their sides with I couldn't believe how sharp they were, like razor blades on the sides of its body. I mean, this thing sliced me to bits because I grabbed it by the tail when I was trying to land it, and it shredded my hands like knives.
Oh, geez.
I was like, oh my gosh, this is dangerous. Like, and that was to your point with the leader.
Yeah,
I was shocked. Like, it is that sharp like a blade. Like, I couldn't believe this thing didn't slice my line just with its body. But
so if you did it again, you'd probably have some gloves on.
You know, I don't know that I'll ever go try to do that again because it was just a pain in the rear. But yeah. But then, and I figured, you know, this is such an off chance, it's just not worth my time or energy to do. It's like, kind of like, check that one off and be done with it. But so then I'm like, okay, well, that was a one in a billion thing. That was like winning the lottery. Then I'm talking, it must have maybe been 20 minutes past. I look over, and another rod is doing that. And so I'm thinking, like, you know, you think of a fish picking
up
a line.
Was it the same bait? Because it was a shrimp initially,
yes,
that the first
same
fish
bait.
Took, right?
It was a shrimp. It was a Walmart shrimp. Like, I mean, this is nothing
frozen
groundbreaking.
Frozen shrimp.
Yes. No groundbreaking special thing. So then another one's down. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, this is happening again. So I proceeded to catch a second one. The experience is the same, so I'm not going to run through that whole thing. I know we're short for time, but, you know, the outlook that I have on it with after this happening, like, okay, well, I was told that these it can't be done. They don't eat. They fast all summer. Even the science would indicate that. But maybe these are outliers. I don't know. But in looking around and seeing just the culture of people that I think live and exist around that river, it made a little more sense to me why it doesn't happen. Because there's no reason for people to be running heavy gear like that in those rivers.
Right.
And then you got to think of how often are people sitting there on a chunk of frozen shrimp on the bottom.
For 12 hours.
For that long. And if they are doing it, they probably are, you know, they're just ill-equipped. So I think that it's a game of opportunities, as I've said. You know, during the course of the year on the Suwannee River, I think there's just very seldom somebody out there that is, you know, there's not a lot of lines in the water at any given point in time on that river that people are doing that. It's a bass fishing river, but I just don't think people are doing it, so the opportunities aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if somebody is putting a shrimp on the bottom with a cane pole or, you know, medium heavy tackle, you are not catching that fish. So I guarantee you there's been people out there who've hooked them and just simply were overwhelmed by the power.
Yeah.
And so it's just not, I think it's more so that, but that I honestly feel like from here to the other side of the world, and I have every intentions of doing a lot of unique fishing trips on a global scale, I just don't know that I'll ever match a fish that is probably bigger and cooler looking maybe, but as, in terms of rarity or something that hasn't been done, I don't know. I think it was just, it was a really cool moment. It was
really
awesome. I mean,
those photos are just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Photos.
That one generated a lot of buzz.
I can only imagine. So, quick question before we head off to a break. There are theories as far as why these Gulf sturgeon jump. Mm-hmm. When they're in the river, and it's either what, to either refill their swim bladder or to communicate with other sturgeon.
Yeah.
Correct. But they haven't definitively determined which
right.
it is.
It's I have no idea. I wish I did know. I've heard different theories on it. I've even talked to guys that have come specifically to study them. The thing is, they don't jump when they're out in like the river mouth. They don't jump when they're off the coast. They only do it up in the rivers. And so there's some idea or some theory that the sudden change in temperature provided by the aquifers, I don't know if that like changes their buoyancy or how they regulate whatever, but for whatever reason, some people seem to think that that sudden and abrupt change in water temperature triggers them to jump.
Fascinating.
I don't know. Again, somebody that's listening that does have the answer probably like, well, listen to this dummy. He didn't know what he's talking about. You're right. I do not know.
For all
no
the fisheries
idea.
Biologists that but, are out there listening.
That was definitely my observation. I had spent more time on that river, too, where it's either that the sturgeon were not there, or is that they were there and they had no reason to jump. It's just, I have no, it's anybody's guess as to why. But
and that's part of their migration route. Mm-hmm. And it's during the summertime primarily.
And I don't know what they're up there for. I would think presumably it's gotta have something to do with the spawning thing. But I've also read that they like never ever sample juveniles in the river. They just don't get the little ones.
Yeah.
So where are the baby ones going? They just don't know. It's a very fascinating
fish. It is
fish.
Absolutely amazing. Okay, we need to head off to another break. More with David when we come back. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
what's your name? Papa was a fisherman. He loved his cars and his steel guitars. Papa was a fisherman.
Mi parte favorita de trabajar en Culver's.
Hola, bienvenidos a Culver's.
Es ver a las sonrisas de nuestros invitados cuando les sirvo una Butterburger preparada a la orden y nuestro fresh frozen custard rico y cremoso.
¿Quieren probar el sabor del
día? Me enorgullece saber que todo está preparado fresco con los mejores ingredientes, como lo que elegiría para mi familia. El cariño extra hace más que llenarte, te llena el corazón. Eso es lo que hace que valga la pena compartir una comida. Bienvenido a Delicioso.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, online at ESPNSWFL.com. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Oh, let the sun beat down upon my face.
Good morning, welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with David Graham, host of the Boundless Pursuit podcast, multi-species angler and blogger. Rolling into the final 10 minutes of Real Talk Radio, we still got a lot to squeeze in a very short amount of time. So, David, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about alligator gar. So I know a lot of people, when they go out to pursue alligator gar, they're going to places like the Trinity River in Texas. We do have some in the northern part of the state of Florida. And obviously, when you're doing an alligator gar trip, you're going to some of these remote areas. You're fishing for these gigantic fish that are over 200 pounds in some cases. So talk a little bit about your fishing experiences for alligator gar and the types of terminal tackle and rod and reel setups that you use when you're targeting them.
Yeah, well, that was an easy sell, you know. I mean, I could kind of work a little bit harder to try to sell someone on the idea of fishing for bowfin. But you're talking about an alligator gar. I mean, that's a fish that sells itself. So for, you know, a starry-eyed kid like me interested in big, wild-looking fish, I mean, that one came up on the radar early and often. And it should be for anybody with any sort of adventurous bone in their body, especially if it's a freshwater fish enthusiast. I mean, we got to take a lot of pride in that species first and foremost, just as Americans, because you're talking about the largest predatory fish on the continent. I mean, and if you're an adventurous angler that likes some variety in their life, I mean, at some point you're going to kind of wonder, you know, I want to go and catch the fastest fish. I want to catch the rarest fish. I want to catch the strongest or the most beautiful.
Yeah.
At some point in time, like at our core level, everybody wants to catch the big one. And that is the largest, and arguably you could really make the case that it's the largest freshwater fish, period. I know we got the white sturgeon, but that one is just in its natural state. A fish that spends part of its life cycle in the oceans as well. It's moving in and out, but strictly freshwater fish, alligator gar. So, man, you talk about a fish that gets absolutely colossus monster. I've done most of my fishing for them with bait, and a lot of people think of it. Okay, well, you know, I don't want to go sit on a chunk of bait for these things. They can be caught on flies. I got a buddy of mine out in Texas named Ryan King. Fly fishes for him. He's fly fishing for a 7-foot-long monster fish. It's phenomenal. So you can catch them on artificial lures, and you can catch them on flies. But by and large, most of them are caught with baits. And we'll use usually like cut chunks of carp is probably the most common thing to do.
Yeah.
Carp
freshwater
or
drum.
There's a fish out there called a buffalo. It's a type of sucker that looks a lot like a carp, totally unrelated. It's like a native species of fish. But yeah, freshwater drum, buffalo, carp, most types of fish like that, like an alligator gar, similar to, it's basically a giant version of a bowfin, very opportunistic species of fish. They're kind of like the cleanup crew. And even though it looks like this murderous monster from hell, they're very like a placid type of fish. They move very slow through the water column, and they're just picking off slow, unweary, dying. You know, they're there to clean up the slow and unweary. That's it. I mean, they're not a fast-moving species of fish that's, you know, eating up all the game species. So you put a chunk of bait on the bottom where there's alligator gar. More often than not, they'll pick it up. But, most of it's out in Texas. And what we do is we fish multiple rods. Use like a, you know, a heavy style boat style spinning rod with, you know, like I said, I use like a 7500 style spinning reel with a live line feature on it. Because with an alligator gar, a lot of times when they pick up the bait, they don't immediately eat it. Like, pick your bait up.
They hold it in their mouth.
They carry it around, and they like to go way down river, find a nice little neat spot. I mean, for a fish that looks like it's there to just death, doom, and destruction, they're very just like casual in their approach. They pick up a bait, carry it around. They might decide to drop it after.
So how do you know when to start reeling so you don't pull it out of their mouth?
Well, it kind of depends. Like, you know, the thing is, if you let them carry it too long, you don't want to be gut hooking these fish. That's what a lot of people did, and I'd be lying if I said that isn't the approach I used to take. It was like, I want to catch it, so I just let them swallow it. Well, then you're cutting your leaders, and you're leaving hooks in their stomach. And, I mean, if you genuinely care about the fish, you don't want to do that. Well, then the alternative is set the hook early, and then you're just going to be losing fish. But you know what? That's part of it. You need to make every effort to get the hook out of that fish. But generally, when they're actually going to be eating it, they'll pick the baits up and they'll carry it downriver, so downstream. They'll find like a little eddy pool or a nice calm spot, and then they stop. And a lot of it is you're using a sliding pole float, like a balsa wood float, and mm-hmm. that helps you kind of track where the fish is going. A lot of times you follow them in a boat or in a canoe, or if you have the ability to do it, which is rare, you follow on the bank. That's almost impossible to do. It's just the landscape out there is too hard. And then at the point that they begin to trek back upriver, normally that's when it's safe to set the hook. They've eaten the bait. But yeah, it's you know, you're usually using steel leaders. I don't know if that's really necessary. Like I said, I started to move to heavier Dacron leader. They're not cutting and really not cutting like that. And really, there's some advantages to Dacron or softer, more supple leader material than, you know, because it's squishy, it's soft, they can bite it and not get scared of it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I can't even imagine. And you've made several trips to Texas.
I've got a lot of history with that species of fish.
But given, so you've been to all these amazing places, you've caught so many just, I mean, unbelievable catches. What is next? To close out the show, we got about 2 minutes. What is next on your bucket list as far as destination and species?
So in March, I'm hoping to head out to Idaho with a buddy of mine. And they've got those landlocked white sturgeon. That's just one. I have to get that white sturgeon under my belt. It's like I've got the alligator gar, and I really want to get the white sturgeon. So that, like, is pretty much already tentatively planned. I feel like it's a low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can knock that one off. So in the March is when I'm aiming to do that. And then I have never been out of the country, but I feel like this is the year. Like, the COVID travel restrictions are over.
Yeah,
the finances are there. My bonus should hit in March. And then my passport, once that comes, should be soon. I've never had the passport. But I am really eager to get to, like, my ultimate dream destination is the Essequibo River in Guyana in South America.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's just like on a global scale, if there was a number one place, that's it for me, because I really want, like, my dream fish, and a lot of freshwater fishermen the same way, mm-hmm. is the Arapaima. Like,
I was thinking, it's Arapaima.
I have no shame in saying it. If I catch one of those things, I think I'll cry. I will cry tears.
I would too. I can completely relate 100%. So. That would just be such an amazing experience. And you'd have to do other mm-hmm. fishing while you were there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there's so many different species of fish in that particular, like, river system. Like, one of the big ones is there's this fish called a wolf fish, like an Anumara.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got a lot of different names. It basically looks like a bowfin on steroids that, like, escaped some kind of laboratory. There's horrific-looking monster fish. And they don't even get all that big. You can have 40-pounder, but they're that one's high on the personal list. But a lot of things
so
like
cool.
that. So I feel like this is going to be a year of not much fishing, but I think I'm hoping to have a lot of very impactful type of trips.
Well, and people can find information about those trips once you come back and follow along mm-hmm. on your adventures if they go to boundless-pursuit.com. You can also find David on Instagram. And David, you said your Instagram handle is?
At Boundless Pursuit. And there's one more website just started launching where you get a little bit more dynamic to it. Boundless Pursuit is only me. But I am now working in partnership with a buddy of mine named Josh Dolan on a website called haverodswilltravel.com. That's going to be a little bit more of a variety hub for podcasts, there's more video content on that one and a lot more contributors.
So check it out. And it's that time again. We got to go. Time flies so fast, so fast on this show. Thank you, Rick Church, the director of the show, for pressing the buttons and screening the calls. David, thank you so much for being here this morning. Remember to share your experiences, share your stories, and get someone new out on the water. Tight lines, everybody. We'll be back next Saturday. Same place, same time. Have a great weekend.
These moments we're left with.
Businesses need to think beyond today. That's why ADP uses data-driven insights to design HR solutions to help your business find more success tomorrow. HR, time, talent, benefits, payroll. ADP, always designing for people.